From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The cold and flu viruses are making their yearly and seasonal appearance, and it seems like everyone is just coming down with something.
I'm not even getting a cold.
Oh, no, no. It's just probably a little drive-in dust, that's all.
Oh, come on, Danny from Greece, cover that cough and sneeze. That is particularly good advice this season, when in addition to a spike in typical winter illnesses, norovirus is spreading more than usual this year. Norovirus is notorious for its symptoms and because it's not as easy to kill as other common bugs. Joining us now to talk more about winter disease season and how to stay safe is Dr. Samir Vora, director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. He's a pediatrician, also has a law degree. Dr. Vora, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, professor and chief of infectious diseases at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield. Dr. Sundaresan, welcome back. Always good to talk with you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, you can always join us today by calling 800-222-9455. If you have a question about COVID, flu, RSV, immunizations, norovirus, whatever it may be, this is the time to ask. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Dr. Vora, I'm going to begin with you, and I'd like to start with respiratory diseases. So Illinois is currently at high levels of respiratory illnesses, up from moderate levels a couple of weeks ago. Talk about how concerned we should be about this.
Well, as you alluded to and kind of described in your opening segment, tis the sneezing. And we are seeing a lot of individuals come with the kind of expected winter surge of respiratory illnesses. We are seeing about 22% of all hospital admissions and 21% of ER visits related to these seasonal illnesses. So it is expected at this time of the year, as it gets really cold all across Illinois, to see this kind of surge. And just a reminder for individuals to learn the lessons that we learned and use those tools that are available to us to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe so that we don't feel the worst aspects of the high levels of acute respiratory illnesses across Illinois.
Dr. Sundaresan, what are you seeing? Is this common post-holiday spike? Is there something different this year? How are you seeing it where you are in Springfield?
So typically January, we do see the second wave of influenza, typically influenza B. This year, there's hardly any influenza B. Most of the influenza, which is much higher than what we usually see in terms of numbers, as tracked by CDC, that trend, the ER visits, test positivity rates, hospitalization rates, percentage deaths, et cetera. So even by those standards, we are a little bit higher. And what we're seeing is influenza A, much higher. RSV, which should start to go down now, the activity is still high. And COVID, which was lower in December, is now starting to increase as well. So cumulatively, we are seeing a lot more. And add to this, the common respiratory viruses, like Dr. Vora was mentioning, the other respiratory viruses are also there. This is the respiratory viral season. So rhinovirus, enterovirus. We are also additionally seeing higher numbers of adenovirus and mycoplasma, which is actually a bacterial infection. Those numbers are coming down, but cumulatively, those numbers have been much higher this year.
That that bacterial, is that the, what is the term I've heard for that? The walking pneumonia or something like that? Is that what people are talking about with that? Or is that something different?
That's right. People don't get as sick. And then, you know, it lingers for a longer time, which is where that term comes from, walking pneumonia, and it's a bacteria.
Yeah, I had a cough that lasted for about a month late last year. I wondered if that was it, which I guess raises the question, Dr. Vora, who is most at risk for these sorts of infections? And, you know, how seriously should people take it? And maybe depending on who they are, right, whether they're older, younger, have newborns, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of this, as always, during the height of these kinds of waves of respiratory illnesses, we do worry about people at the end of the spectrum, individuals over 65, and then those very young children that are susceptible to getting really sick from these illnesses. As always, we also say that if you have a chronic medical conditions or are immunocompromised, you can also get really sick. One of the things that we are noticing, though, that the highest jump, as Dr. Sundaresan said, we are seeing this sort of increase in flu. And the group that is being the most affected by flu right now are 5 to 17-year-olds. And we are very sad to report that we've already seen this season 4 children pass away from flu. We've had 1 child death from COVID and 1 child death from RSV. So if you are at risk, really important for you not too late to get your flu shot or your COVID-19 shot, recommended for those 6 months and over. And now this is the second season for an RSV immunization that is available for those that are 8 months and younger, and also available for pregnant moms who can get that shot to make sure that when their newborn is born, that they're protected. So really important opportunities to get those vaccinations to prevent the most serious illnesses.
You know, I'm glad you brought up vaccinations because this is something that we have been talking about a lot over the past few years and really in the past few months. And I don't know how much you want to get into, you know, the political uncertainty over that in the future, but have you seen declines in uptake of vaccinations? On the one hand, it looks like, you know, I just anecdotally, I drive around, I see Walgreens and CVS pushing very hard to get people to come in and take these up. On the other hand, I know from personal experience, we tried to get a youth COVID vaccine for my younger son, and we have not been able to find it anywhere in central Illinois. So there seems to be a shortage of that. So I take that where you will.
I think it's a great question. And part of this is a little bit of just kind of our fatigue towards all the things that we were challenged with during the height of the pandemic. But vaccines continue to be crucially important, especially sort of preventing that severe disease. And so, like you said, most of your retail pharmacies should be able to provide you with that flu or COVID-19. Vaccines.gov is also a critically important website to locate those kinds of vaccinations in need, and then to talk to your local provider. Really important because we're seeing those increases in illnesses. Getting as much protection to protect yourself and your loved one. And even in groups like we mentioned, the 5 to 17-year-old that have the highest rate of flu, we've only seen about 18% of that age group get their flu shot this season.
Only 18%. Well, and yeah, that's interesting. What about the shortage? Are you aware of any sort of systemic issues that's leading to this shortage of the youth COVID vaccine?
We haven't heard that from any of our federal or state partners. So part of it is that the supply should be there. I think what you're identifying is kind of an important consideration for us at the state to continue to monitor is that is it available in the most easy and accessible way? And we will continue to kind of use our messaging from the state to say that there is the supply is there for those that need it, but ensuring that individuals have the right access and information to get the shot to in the closest place near their home.
Yeah, well, I can tell you again, anecdotally, in Central Illinois, every CVS, Walgreens, and our family medicine clinic we go to, all out and have been out for a long time. Dr. Sundaresan, let's talk a little bit. How does somebody know when they have COVID or flu that's serious enough that they should actually seek medical attention versus riding it out, which is, often what you will hear from a physician for this kind of illness.
Yeah, the symptoms are very similar between all the viruses, and now add norovirus to that mix as well. Can present with a lot of a flu-like illness, fevers, headaches, body aches. Some of the infections, thankfully, don't last very long. But if there is persistent fever, and if there is a risk factor, chronic disease, immunocompromising conditions, definitely one should seek medical attention. The other thing is with regards to testing, that's highly encouraged because we do have antiviral treatments for a flu as well as COVID. In fact, we also have prophylactic treatment for anybody that gets exposed for the flu. So treatment of a diagnosis, having a diagnosis definitely helps. So testing definitely helps.
And are you talking about home testing or making an appointment at your clinic or urgent care or something like that?
There is home testing available for COVID and flu, but RSV, strep throat, one swab that can actually check for all of these. So urgent cares, ERs or doctor's offices, provider's offices will have these rapid tests. So if there is any concern at all with risk factors, symptoms that are lasting longer, testing is definitely recommended.
And what about alleviating symptoms, Dr. Sundaresan? You mentioned that there are treatments for some of these. Anything else you'd recommend people do?
Symptomatic treatment helps. So, a paracetamol, keeping themselves hydrated. And one other thing is, we don't want to be shifting these viruses. So, if you're really sick, stay home, stay away from congregations or groups. So, we really don't want to be circulating or moving these viruses where other susceptible or vulnerable people get exposed to this.
Paracetamol, that's Tylenol, right? Same
Tylenol.
difference. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Vora, I also wanted to ask you about other measures people could be taking. We've seen some hospital systems imposing limits on number of visitors, age restrictions on visitors. There have been mask requirements, or in some cases, one requirement was eased to a recommendation. I guess some people objected to the requirement. Are there formal state recommendations on that sort of thing?
So what we did do, as we were anticipating this surge, IDPH issued a health alert to hospitals and healthcare facilities, recommending that they really take note of their local conditions. And as you mentioned, kind of consider these kind of targeted steps to help decrease the circulation of seasonal illnesses. That's why you've seen hospitals, use their local information to decide whether they were recommending or mandating visitor restrictions, or kind of the types of in-hospital measures like recommending masking. It's usually a very kind of close relationship for us between the state and our hospital partners, where we're monitoring the data, they're monitoring their own local data so that we can understand the demand for care, understand if we're experiencing any capacity issues and what supports those local hospitals may need. That kind of line of communication has been incredibly strong since the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. And fortunately, we're doing as well as can be expected during this time in maintaining those hospital beds. The other place where the state is very much having lots of education guidance is with our long-term care facilities and in communication with our local health departments to make sure that we are in line with any kind of outbreak investigations and doing the types of things, the testing and treatment that Dr. Sundaresan mentioned, and really kind of controlling the spread of these illnesses, especially as they affect our most vulnerable residents.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show. We are talking about winter illness season. We've been focusing in this first part of our conversation on flu and COVID, RSV, some of the other respiratory illnesses that are out there. My guests are Dr. Samir Vora, who is the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, and Dr. Vifia Sundaresan, who is a professor and chief of infectious diseases at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. We're going to continue this conversation. If you have questions, we'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455. After the break, we're going to get into norovirus, which has been getting a lot of attention this year. So again, if you have questions, you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come here on the 21st show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about winter virus season. We began with respiratory viruses, COVID, flu, things like that. Now I want to turn to norovirus. I should say my guests for this are Dr. Vithya Sundaresan, who's professor and chief of infectious diseases at SIU School of Medicine, and Dr. Samir Vora, director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. And I want to turn now to norovirus. It's been getting a lot of attention this year. We found a study that a decade ago, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said an estimated 1 in 15 Americans become ill with norovirus every year. I'm going to say that again. 1 in 15 Americans get sick from it every year. There are up to 800 deaths, predominantly among young children and the elderly. So, Dr. Vora, maybe you can just remind us, for those who are less familiar with it, what exactly is norovirus?
So norovirus, also often kind of referred by a lot of folks as, you know, the stomach bug, the stomach flu, is a very uncomfortable kind of stomach GI illness where you have diarrhea, vomiting, nausea, and a really bad stomach pain. It can lead to fever and headaches and body aches. But it has really no relationship to the flu. It's that gastrointestinal illness that can really cause these kinds of uncomfortable GI symptoms and can be really dangerous at times, as you mentioned, for people who get significantly dehydrated because of this diarrhea and vomiting, and then can get potentially really sick if they don't match up and get hydrated from all of those GI losses.
Yeah, apologies to anyone listening to this over their lunch break. How long do symptoms last? And I gather this is one of those where you can actually kind of pinpoint with some relative accuracy than other viral infections when you got it based on the onset time?
Yeah, so you usually develop symptoms pretty quickly after you're being exposed, about 12 hours to 48 hours, so half a day to 2 days. The good news is that typically it doesn't last too long. On average, you're having kind of symptoms for 1 to 3 days, 24 to 72 hours. But for a lot of people, you're really uncomfortable for those 24 to 72 hours. The really challenging part, though, is that the virus can continue to spread and often spreads pretty early, pretty easily, excuse me. And it can spread for 2 weeks or more even after you feel better.
2 weeks or more. Well, I want to come back to that point a little later in our conversation. Dr. Sundaresan, let me ask you, we heard those phrases, winter, stomach bug, stomach flu, inaccurate though they may be. A couple of years ago, I learned that Swedish, the Swedish language, has one of those amazing compound words, which is vinterkräksjukan, which is winter vomiting illness. All different ways to describe this same phenomenon. It has a reputation as well as something that people get on cruise ships. So maybe you can talk about how you can get it on land. This is not like something unique to the sea. And as we're seeing, it's spreading on land. How do you get norovirus?
Yeah, so, I think the description or the timeline for this is typically November to April. Colder months is when you see this virus. And it's not new. It's just that the numbers are much higher this year. In fact, last year they started to see that, and this year it's a quiet high. It has a very high attack rate, which means that a lot of the people that get exposed, 70% or over, can get sick. It's extremely hardy, so it actually not only can pass from people to people, the infection, but it also survives on inanimate surfaces, doorknobs, high contact surfaces. So it can stay there, and then fingertips can pick it up. And then, if there's ingestion of the virus, people get sick. The virus actually causes inflammation of the stomach lining and causes the illness.
And I understand so, it's not as susceptible to like a squirt of hand sanitizer as maybe some other viruses would be.
Yeah. So, hot water, washing your hands with water and soap, in fact, damages the outer shell of the virus. So it's highly recommended to wash hands with water and soap rather than hand sanitizers where it doesn't get the virus as well as the hand washing with water and soap.
Dr. Vora, so throughout Illinois and across the country, really, there's been this significant rise in norovirus activity this year, or at least people in the media are noticing it. How does Illinois look right now?
So absolutely. And as Dr. Sundaresan mentioned, we are seeing high levels of norovirus. We at the state, norovirus per individual case isn't reportable. So we don't track the amount of individual cases. What we do track are outbreaks. And even just this past December, we recorded 84 norovirus outbreaks around the state. This compares to 49 in December 2018, 36 in December 2019. And we saw a lot much lower levels during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. The physical distancing, the hand hygiene, that increased focus on cleaning limited these kinds of clusters of cases of norovirus. But as you're seeing that even compared to pre-pandemic levels in 2018 and 2019, especially as we kind of compare them to December, we are seeing very high levels, 84 outbreaks around the state. And this is not just an Illinois phenomenon. We are seeing this throughout the country.
When you say an outbreak, are you talking about like a particular dinner party or a college dining hall or a convention? Or how do you define that? Wastewater testing, reporting from
health
authorities?
It is really that cluster. So we're seeing a group of reported cases that are emerging. To your point, exactly. Usually things, congregate settings like schools or long-term care centers, things that we're noticing that have been reported to the local health department and then reported to us. So it's not just, an individual case, right? It's a group of cases because, as Dr. Sundaresan mentioned too, this virus spreads and spreads quickly, and we're seeing a number of those outbreaks across the state.
So, Dr. Sundaresan, if one gets infected with norovirus, what do you do?
Well, there is no antiviral treatment or a vaccine as of yet for norovirus. So keeping one hydrated, making sure you do not get dehydrated from the vomiting or diarrhea, that's at best, and then rest. So rest and hydration are really the cornerstone for treatment right now. And if somebody gets really dehydrated, that they might even need to go to the ER to get intravenous fluids to make sure that they're not getting in trouble from that.
Okay, and so I want to come back to this idea of contagiousness. And Dr. Sundaration, we heard Dr. Vora say how long. Maybe you can just remind us again. How long are you contagious or a danger to other people if you come down with norovirus?
Sure. I'm going to repeat what Dr. Vora said in terms of the incubation period. It can be anywhere from 12 to 48 hours. You get exposed within 12 to 48 hours, people start getting sick. The symptoms can last anywhere from 12 to 60 plus hours, so 1 to 3 days again. And then the virus is shed in stool for up to 12 to 14 days. Typically, although the symptoms have abated, people feel better, they are still capable of transmitting this because of the shedding in the stool. So up to 2 weeks after people get better, they're still infectious potentially. And then, if somebody's gotten sick at home, it's important to make sure that there's deep cleaning done around that area. There's the high touch surfaces, doorknobs, tables, etc., are wiped down, and that way we can prevent this from spreading to others as well.
Yeah, wash your hands after using the bathroom, most certainly. And but it's through, that's a good point then. So it's through stool. This is not necessarily something where there's like an isolation recommendation as you'd have with a respiratory virus.
Not typically. When if they're actively having diarrhea, yes, stay home. You don't want to be out
Sure, sure.
working. You don't want to be with the other family members as well.
Okay, well, that makes sense, but not for 2 weeks. You shouldn't necessarily have to, even though you're infectious, just as long as people are taking precautions, I guess, to
Yeah.
not,
Yep.
yeah.
So typically 24 hours after fever has settled down, nausea and vomiting has settled down, you're okay to get back.
Okay, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Patricia is on the line from Freeport, Illinois. Patricia, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. I got that from my granddaughter and my great granddaughter, who was 8 months old, lived in Wichita, and I went to visit. And I'm 79, and it lasted for 14 hours. I did nothing but have diarrhea and vomiting every 15 to 30 minutes. It was the most horrendous thing I've ever gone through in my life. I did read where Dr. Gupta said that the only thing that will kill that virus is peroxide or bleach, that Lysol or anything like that won't. My question is, am I susceptible to get that again? I pray your answer is going to say no. So that's my question.
All right, Patricia, I'm so sorry you went through that. It sounds awful, but thank you for calling in with the question. Dr. Sundaration, I'll pass that to you.
Yeah. So there are about 10 genogroups and 48 genotypes of this virus. Typically, when someone gets an infection with norovirus, the immunity, unfortunately, we don't have a way to predict, but can last anywhere from 6 months to 8 years sometimes. But there are other genotypes that it doesn't protect against. It's only the specific type of virus that they were infected with. The most common circulating strain, which has caused about 70% of the infections if for this round, is G2, the Roman numeral 2.17, but there are still the other strains. So it doesn't provide long-lasting immunity, but against other strains, and people can get reinfection because it's a wide range of the time that people are immune after getting active or infection.
All right, thank you for that. And if anyone else has any other questions, we've got just a few minutes left, 800-222-9455. Dr. Vora, anything else you want to add to that about sort of systemic things that people or institutions or even at the family level we should be doing to, prevent the spread of norovirus?
Yeah, thanks, Brian and Patricia. So sorry to hear about that challenge and your uncomfortable symptoms. One of the most important things with norovirus is how it can spread, right, from that fecal oral route, we say. So anything that kind of, touches your mouth. The most kind of sensitive occupations for this are food handlers and healthcare workers. And those ones especially kind of should not work until 48 hours after diarrhea and vomiting have stopped, 24 hours for schools and daycares, including staff, volunteers, and students, really to kind of help prevent that control and for food handlers in general. As we mentioned, and as Patricia mentioned previously, that alcohol-based hand sanitizers are not effective. So the chlorine bleach solution, usually it's a pretty high concentration, kind of 1,000 to 5,000 parts are really recommended by the Environmental Protection Agency. And similarly, many kind of common household cleaners are not as effective. So bleach disinfectant is really important to kill that norovirus.
You got to get that strong stuff in order to clean that. We had another question. Linda called in, wanted to know, didn't want to go on air, but wanted to ask if there's a special type of like a blood type that's susceptible to norovirus. She's heard that type A is more susceptible. Dr. Sundaration, I'm going to pivot that to you.
Not necessarily. Like I said, the attack rate is very high. So if people get exposed to this, there's a very high chance that they will get sick. Nothing in particular, but people with immunocompromising conditions, or definitely as they are vulnerable to other infections, they are can get more severe symptoms from this.
And we had another caller. This kind of harkens back to the earlier part of our conversation. Paul from Urbana called in, has heard about drugstore availability to test for COVID, flu, or RSV. He's wondering if there's an RNA test of a similar light. Said he previously experienced an illness, took a test, got nothing back. He thinks his illness was too weak to detect. Dr. Sundaration, I'm going to ask that to you as well.
PCR or a lot of the over-the-counter tests too, they do use antigens, and many of them are RNA. The timing of the testing is very, very important. If symptoms are persisting, it might be worthwhile repeating the test if there's high suspicion for this. And there are always better tests that are available through the labs in urgent care or ERs or doctor's offices, providers' offices, which will be confirmatory.
Okay, and we are so short on time. We did get one last call. Cheryl is taking a 2.5 day train trip, only about 20 seconds. Dr. Sundaration, what can she do to protect herself from norovirus?
Well, masks still are effective for norovirus. Well, wash your hands. Hand washing is by far the most effective. Unfortunately, we don't have a vaccine for that, but hand washing is the best. And then for the respiratory viruses, I want to reiterate, masks are still the best way to protect ourselves when we are in crowds or congregate settings,
All right.
to make sure that we don't get the virus.
We'll have to leave it there. Dr. Vithya Sundaration, Dr. Samir Vorha, Director of Public Health for Illinois. Thank you both so much for being with us. More to come here on the 21st show. Stay with us.